A warm welcome to our Thursdays with David Foster Wallace series, where we every week investigate Infinite Jest. Hello, hello, welcome to the show, TDFW After episode number 3. Are you guys gonna miss that intro? I sort of already miss it, even though we still are technically recording Infinite Jest episodes. Let me know in the comments about what you think about all of our cool intros. We have one for Horrifying Classics, Halloween. We also have a new one for December, Dickens. I think the December one rivals this one quite a bit, so just let me know what your favorite intro is so far. Patrons, you can include your Patreon intro as well. That is a very specially edited thing. But here is the episode that all of you diehard TDFW fans have been waiting for, the episode where I address loose ends in the novel and in our series. We will be talking some more about narration and the ending of IJ, as well as a few of the questions and hang-ups that I have about the novel. First things first, I have gotten a lot of slack in the comments for not addressing my thoughts on the double versus single quotation marks issue, and I understand that it's a big deal and could be a game changer for issues like the narration, but I have decidedly placed myself in the opposing camp for now, and thusly just neglected to write it into the other episode. Here is the argument that I don't agree with. Throughout Infinite Jest, dialogue is within single quotation marks, leading many fans and scholars to believe that there are implied double quotation marks surrounding the entire novel, starting before the first word and ending after the last word. As evidence, there are a few short stories of Wallace's that use this same technique and also seem to have the quality of being enwrapped inside a narrator's blanket for the entire piece, start to finish. Even in sections that create sort of a red herring for the narration, and don't worry, I'll give a more concrete example of this in a minute. And this next part is, I think, the most compelling part of the whole argument, which is that this completely narrator-enwrapped narrative would mean that, in this case, DFW's depiction of his past self as a writer himself narrates the whole of the book, really driving home the message about the main point of the novel. We know that the single quotation marks thing was intentional on Wallace's part. There's no way it couldn't be given the rigorous editing process that this novel went through. And actually, I also found direction from Wallace about this issue in his notes to the copy editor, linked down in the show notes at relevanceofliterature.com/notes. DFW writes, quote, "Hi, FYI, the following non-standard features of the manuscript are intentional and will get studied by the author if colored penciled by you," unquote. And then he lists as one of his itemizations here, quote, "single quotation marks around a dialogue and titles with double quotation marks inside reversal of normal order," unquote. Great. And the argument continues that DFW is a quintessentially American writer. The Chicago Manual of Style Online literally says, quote, "For non-specialist texts, Chicago recommends double quotation marks for everything except quotations within quotations. The comma or period goes inside," unquote. So why else would DFW switch the order unless it was to show us that the narrator was actually narrating the whole time, even through those red herring sections involving Hal and his first-person narration in the novel? My rebuttal to that argument is this. DFW was a quintessentially American writer, but he was also a quintessentially eccentric. He wrote an entire note to the copywriter, excerpted above, that says, "Hey bud, just so you know, I have a whole list of unconventional whack grammar that you're just gonna have to ignore when you're editing the manuscript, and if you try to edit it like you normally would, watch me erase your colored pencil with my eraser." Him using single quotation marks wasn't him trying to deviate from the American standard in favor of the European one. It was him taking a deliberate aesthetic preference for the novel, one that is reportedly less cluttered and flows better on the page, just as he took deliberate moves to capitalize and hyphenate nouns as he saw fit, a la the German language. This is the author who revitalized the word phantods and codified words like greebles, after all. And regarding the most robust point of the other argument about driving home the main point of the novel, the main point comes across without the added help from this double quotation mark feature of the narration, and I would argue it's even more fun to investigate without something so structural laughing at you in the face about it. Thus, while I like the other argument in favor of the implied double quotations at the beginning and think that it makes sense-ish regarding the points about the all-encompassing narration, when I go back to Howell's first-person narrative threads, I can't find enough evidence of an embedded narration to justify implying literally so much about the structure of the novel and narration just from a quirky structural addition to the novel. And I get that if indeed the double quotation marks do give us clues about the narrative structure, it's likely intentional on DFW's part that there isn't much in Hal's narration that gives that away, but after a first read of the novel, that's what I have and that's what I think. Unfortunately, we can't know the answer to this problem entirely because, as far as my digging can tell, DFW never addressed it himself, meaning that both theories are based on quite a bit of speculation and implication. Those of you who disagree with me, I don't think you're wrong, and I respect your solid evidence. This is just one of those problems that we cannot answer at this point. Alright, I think everyone needs a break after that fun investigation. I will be back with the rest in 1 minute. I clearly have an unabridged, childish excitement for Halloween. That is why we do such a blown-up, horrifying classic series every single year. But you know what else I love? Extending horrifying classics to our Patreon page, where we will be reading an extra spooktastic book for our October Patreon-only podcast. Signing up at patreon.com/relevanceofliterature is an inexpensive and simple way to ensure that the show continues to take flight like a bat, because Halloween is near. See you all on Patreon. The next part of this episode is also very fun for me and hopefully for you as well. Honestly, I thought it would be just a fun time to make the argument that there are no loose ends in Infinite Jest just because of that one infamous blog post that says that the threads don't connect together and that there are a lot of plot holes, which I seriously disagree with, and I think that was extremely misleading when I read that blog post the first time. My two cents here are actually quite simple. When there is a supposed loose end, just do some research, read the novel again, you will find your answer. My read of Infinite Jest is that it is in many ways a microcosm of life, and I'm not exaggerating when I say that. The book itself is, if not literally infinite, fairly close to that in terms of the amount of time that you can spend theorizing and understanding and connecting bits and bobs of this novel together, and this topic of loose ends is no exception to that. As a quick aside here, this tradition of figuring it out for yourself and getting really deep into the novel might be why there's so much erroneous information out there about this novel in general, especially on the internet. It does seem heavy-handed for me to be encouraging something that could lead to more error and misinformation, but I'm after creating better readers and better writers here, so the suggestion suits my purposes just fine. But there's one area specifically where I have a really hard time making this argument, and that is with deliberate omission in the novel. Kate Gompert, for example, and a few of the other characters at the DARH, and also Steeply, if I'm being honest, and maybe Maraith's wife, anyone? Just kidding on that last one. So Kate Gompert, we know, goes through that horrible robbery sequence with poor Tony Krause fresh from his seizure. Again, threads connect and collide if you pay enough attention, and ends up at the bar with Maraith. Threads collide, and he's trying to convince Kate to go view the entertainment, and there's one mention of her later from, I believe, Calvin Thrust, don't quote me on that, during one of the hospital visit sequences, but that's the end of Kate. And I know the point of all of this omission is to let the reader decide for themselves, but it's also possible that DFW wrote more about Kate later in the manuscript and it got cut in the final publication, but why? There's so much depth to the novel that it feels to me out of place to add such a jagged ending to a character thread or character thread, like multiple of them, like this one. Let me know in the comments, though, about your thoughts on how Kate and other characters' threads get resolved, if they do. I'm super interested to know your thoughts on if Kate's abrupt ending was enough for you and why. Finally, to wrap up here, I need to say something vitally important about our TDFW series in general, which is that while it is a catalog that walks viewers through the entire novel start to finish and touches on a lot of plot points and areas of discussion, it is still a very imperfect first read-through of the novel that most of all gives you a glimpse of what it's like to seriously pursue an academic deep dive of the text for literally 8 months straight. There are supposed to be missteps and omissions, even grave ones. That is just the nature of reading this book for the first time. So, all of that being said, thank you all for your comments and revisions and additions to the series. We really appreciate all the help and suggestions as this series has continued along, and we will keep updating the description boxes of episodes where I get stuff wrong, but please also know that the series is not a comprehensive reading guide of Infinite Jest. I'm aware that I'm not nearly experienced enough with the novel to take on that role. Thank you all so much for sticking in on this week's episode. We will be back on Monday, so until then. If you enjoyed the discussion and would like to hear more from us, there is a show and a series for everyone, so I'd recommend checking out our website, relevanceofliterature.com, under the ongoing series tab for links to our entire back catalog of episodes. We also have a couple of open surveys that you can find through the links in the description, so if you have 3 minutes while you're waiting in line somewhere, we would very much appreciate your feedback on our show. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode, and we'll see you next time.